Democratic State Senator Nakia Harris-Dodd has made a decision that one term is enough. The sports term is one and done, but we'll get into that. So let's have an exit interview with Senator Nakia Harris-Dodd, a Democrat representing the 6th District, Milwaukee. Senator, thanks for sitting down with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, most people try to serve longer than one term in the state Senate. You've made a different decision. Why?
Yes. And, you know, I actually was looking forward to another term at the end of this term as I was fundraising, talking to constituents, and really trying to gear up for this next term. But ironically, back this past February, as I was getting prepared for an event that was happening in my life, I had a realization that happened to me that was sort of allowed me to kind of think about really what are my next steps, and is running a second term the right decision right now when I put into place that I have, at that time, I had just a solid one-year-old who will be 2 on October 12th of this year. However,
give us your son's name.
His name is Anthony Thomas.
Thank you. Just wanted to get that out of the way.
Yes.
Thank you. So he will be 2 soon.
He will be
Anthony
2 soon.
Thomas will be 2.
Yes.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
And so, needless to say, and I had him with me during this realization, and it just had came very clear, and it was made very clear in that moment where I had this aha moment that now is really not the right time. I am at a ripe age in my life where, and I've had a great career. I've been in politics now a total of 6 years at the end of this term. And my son, as you just recently come into my life with the marriage of my husband as well, but it's more like, where do, you know, I've had my career. I had my life. What do I do to prepare my son for his life and his career goals and whatever it is he wants to do? And so that really helped to really bring it home for me that one term is enough right now. I can always come back, though. That's the beauty of it, and I didn't think of it at that time, but right now it's just, you know, let's do this for my child.
Most senators have served in the Assembly. You didn't. You came right to the Senate. So what was your learning process like as someone who hadn't served previously in the Assembly?
Man, it was a huge learning curve. And I thought long and hard about this. I kind of knew you would ask this question. And I thought back when you had that first interview with me when I was on a campaign trail.
When you were a candidate.
Yes. And I was so different then, clearly. And I do remember being just so afraid of my words, afraid of what I would say that would embarrass me, and tried to say less as possible so that I didn't, you know, make a fool of myself on the campaign trail. But it kept me from really opening up and really having real conversations with people at that time. But needless to say, the learning curve has been very steep. It was very steep. And really getting to know everybody, understanding all the issues to the capacity of being able to articulate exactly what a bill says, why it was written a certain kind of way, and then how to either defend it or fight against it, took some time to really get to that point where I opened up and realized, oh, you do have a voice in there. You don't just have a heart for the work that you do, but you really, understanding all that and becoming more open to, you know, having debates and realizing you're going to win some and lose some gave me that confidence to, you know, kind of speak up a little more. But it was tough, but I think now that I'm at the end and I was getting ready to, you know, gear up for another term and was feeling really confident about that, I feel like, you know, even though there's more to learn, I had come a long way to really understand the issues and be able to talk about them, be more informative about what I was talking about, and felt confident that I really know what I'm talking about and I really know how to make a difference. And so that's, it's been fun getting to this point.
Did you find the Capitol a lot more partisan than you had thought it would be?
That is some true. It's a lot. Yes.
There's a little bit of my way or the highway up here, isn't there? Or is there quite a bit of that?
It is quite a bit of that, but it's like that on both sides, though, I would say. I found that this environment makes it really challenging sometimes to be, to really be an individual in this building, to be able to make logical decisions that you know are really best for your constituency. and for the state overall. But it certainly has been a my way or the highway type of environment. And you take the Bucks Arena.
Let's talk about it. Go ahead.
Yeah, as a major eye-opening situation that I personally had to deal with being in the legislature. And realizing that, you know, they really, you know, the Republicans were not really interested at all in our point of view, and just really was, they were going to make a decision with or without us, which was really scary. I mean, there came a point where we finally were at the table, but it was like after they made their decision and after they decided how they were going to use our input. So it was pretty scary to watch.
You just said something very interesting. The Republicans, how they were going to use your input. Mm-hmm. So not incorporate or factor in your input?
Right. And I think, so how do I want to clear that up, I guess? It was more of it's like, okay, if they'll take our input, but they've already had their minds made up. So if it aligned with what they were already thinking, then it's a go. But if it did not, there was definitely a uphill battle trying to get some of the discussion to kind of go our way, where we felt, you know, you had to look out for the people a little bit more.
But the Republicans wanted Democratic votes for the Bucks package.
Oh, they needed us.
They needed you.
Yeah.
So you were able to add, you and Senator Larson were able mm-hmm. to add some of these concessions. Well, concessions is the wrong term. Some of these provisions that they would pay specified wages.
Right.
And what do you consider the major concessions by the Republicans that helped Milwaukee in the Bucks package, Senator?
That's a good question. What do I think is the... Can you repeat it again for me?
What concessions did the Republicans have to make that helped the Bucks deal mm-hmm. and the city of Milwaukee? Because they needed your votes.
Right. Well, you know, they had to look at, you know, a lot of the fact that there was other input, there were other people at the table that needed mm-hmm. to be considered.
Milwaukee County.
That's
some
it.
Of the labor groups.
Exactly.
Community groups. Milwaukee right. Common Council.
Exactly.
Excuse me for interrupting.
Oh, no, that's good that you broke that down, because, it was one of those things where if you needed our vote, even though, and I still feel like they just had it all together. I mean, I can't really say that, you know, they, you know, kind of, yeah, it's really challenging for me to really speak on that right now, but because I'm trying to remember some of those conversations that we had, because I know my mind was already made up, and I think that's really where I was coming from.
Well, where you were coming from is the importance of keeping the Bucks
yes.
to Milwaukee and
yes.
keeping whatever jobs they provide, both in Bucks Arena and the surrounding, now it's becoming an entertainment district.
Right.
Was there any major thing that you wanted in the Bucks package that you didn't get? Do you remember?
I was the type of person, because the Bucks Arena was in my district, I was more concerned about losing the Bucks overall.
Okay.
And so I came with a different approach, to be quite honest with you. And although I supported my colleagues, and that was something I thought that was very important on some of the issues that they had, to make it more of an open conversation where mm-hmm. they had to listen to us and use some of our information. But when I guess I had come to the realization that when you're in this building and when you talk about what we first talked about, it's a my way or the highway, when you really put that into perspective, and I put that into perspective for my constituents, it was more of how do we just keep the Bucks here
okay.
without losing our souls here? We don't want to give away everything, but when you've had these backdoor or closed-door conversations and we've never been a part of them, it led me to believe that they already had it together. They'll listen to us and they'll entertain us for a moment, but the truth of the matter is the decision was already made. They knew they were going to have to make some moves when it came to the salaries or how much people would get paid and all that kind of, or how do I say that? Not so much how much people get paid.
The impact on the community.
The impact on the community, and making sure that, you know, there were opportunities that there were living wage jobs,
okay.
that people could actually sustain on these jobs. They knew they had to do these things already. So from my perspective, again, it was more of how do we just keep them here, maintain this economic base, and grow it from here. but not excluding the community around them. And for me, it was more of, you know, how are you going to support this community? Are you going to make sure that the people that live in these communities actually work in at the entertainment center? You know, like, are they going to be employed and hired here, hired and employed? So to that point, I think some of those types of concessions were made where we were able to make sure that in this deal, through the help of, you know, my colleagues, that those types of things would be taken into consideration.
Do you consider the fact that the Bucks stayed with the new arena with some recognition in the deal that those community jobs are going to stay in place your biggest achievement in your Senate term?
I would not say that's my biggest.
Or is there something else?
My biggest achievement, honestly, is really fighting against the gun violence in Milwaukee. I feel, you know, rallying my community in the face that we're not passing legislation to keep guns out of the hands of individuals that should not have them. Rallying them to basically have a conversation in this fight and feel like they have some ownership in taking back their neighborhoods and their communities.
Okay.
And part of that was forming the Unite Milwaukee Summit that actually will continue on with other leadership in the State Assembly as I leave, is making sure that, you know, we continue to have those conversations and that we provide resources for community members to feel like they can live in their community without fear of gun violence. So it still has a long way to go, but and we still have some bills that really need to be passed to make sure that, you know, folks again who are prohibited should not have the access to firearms. That was a huge accomplishment in just actually getting the community together, because at the end of the day, why I'm here is to serve the people.
Mm-hmm.
And serving my district is making sure they have a voice in this fight, and we can have a conversation about it and be realistic about what we can actually do. And that was one of the things outside of the fact that we're not really passing real legislation to keep our community safe.
What do you consider your biggest disappointment in 4 years, Senator?
Biggest disappointment for myself is, you know, not being able to really pass as many bills as I would thought were necessary in order to, you know, make sure that we have quality care for mothers who are, you know, pregnant. To make sure that, again, we are looking at how we solve the violence, the gun violence in Milwaukee, the joblessness that, you know, or unemployment issues that we have in Milwaukee, the black male incarceration issues. I mean, you know, the biggest disappointment is that we couldn't have enough, you know, real conversations to pass laws that were going to really make an impact on people's lives.
What did you learn about how legislators from outside Milwaukee County feel about the inner city that you represent?
Quite frankly, you know, it's actually been kind of disheartening with a few of the, you know, representatives that have sent out press releases about Milwaukee and taking, you know, using opportunities of our pain to say we're a problem in certain aspects of their belief system. It's been, you know, really eye-opening to see that we still have folks that believe that, you know, Milwaukee is a drain on the system and on the rest of the state, instead of looking at us as an asset and that we are the largest economic, you know, hub and we are the ones that keep this state going, you still have that mentality that we're actually taking more away than we are giving, or looked at as some stepchild that needs more resources, versus if you give us those resources, you will see that this state will actually thrive. Kind of mentality. And so that's been disheartening to see some of the prejudices that come out of people's mouths and what's in their heart, and them not putting, you know, their thoughts aside to look at the state as a whole, and that we all come from different places and that we all have something to offer, and that if we work together, we can actually achieve something greater than what we're doing.
Do you think the violence and the protests in August will open a new era of willingness of outstate legislators to understand some of the 6th District problems or worsen their attitudes towards Milwaukee? Harden their attitudes towards Milwaukee.
Right. I don't think it's helped us, quite frankly. I just don't believe that, you know, there's enough information or enough experiences for these particular individuals to understand what the people in my district are going through and what they have dealt with their entire lives, trying to get jobs, trying to send their kids to great schools, you know, and really looking to live in safe communities, in nurturing communities. And so what happened in August was truly just unfortunate. And very sad for us because, you know, we've done so many great things, and then to have that issue be, you know, on the books now is, you know, I don't think it's helped us at all when it comes to outstate.
Immediately, the governor and the mayor and the county executive announced $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. Your response to that, was that helpful or was that just a drop in the bucket in terms of the needs of the 6th District, Senator?
Right. You know, we can throw money at, first of all, when you talk about, you know, with the joblessness and unemployment that I did talk about, there is going to take resources like funding to help repair a lot of the infrastructure to be able to build and get people in jobs.
Yes.
So I think it does help in some kind of way. But you can't just throw money at a problem. And that kind of creates another issue because then people still haven't had, you know, their concerns heard to the point that there's a real difference being made in their community. You can rebuild the buildings, but what employer is going to be there? Are they going to employ from that community? You know, are some of those areas going to be left blight? In fact, I know one business for sure is never coming back. So there's even a greater loss of employment and sustainability in that area. But it's going to take more than just throwing money at a situation. And quite frankly, that just seems to be a pattern sometimes, is we think, oh, let's just throw that money at, you know, the community and they'll be quiet. But people want to feel like, you know, that they're the people that they put in office are going to really understand them more and really break down the system that continues to keep them oppressed, that continues to keep them out of jobs, keep them out of schools, great schools, or not improving their neighborhoods. And that's going to take more than, I guess, just money. And I don't want to just keep saying that, but it really is. It's going to take more than that. People want to see that you really care about them and what's ailing them.
The 4 years that you served the 6th District, have your constituents become more weary of both politics and the media in terms of their ability to help them do better for themselves and their families and those they love?
Mm-hmm.
Are they giving up more on the two institutions of politics and the media?
They've given up on politicians a long time ago. I mean, to believe in a system that has consistently put you down, not allowed for there to be more opportunities. They have not taken the institutional racism very seriously, and actually trying to disband institutional racism and be able to hold the folks accountable that are employers. It's like you're giving into those individuals and not even taking into account that they're the ones that are keeping folks, not so much keeping folks out of jobs, but not giving folks opportunities.
Which is my next question. The business community, businesses that hang up the now hiring signs,
mm-hmm.
businesses that talk about the skills gap,
mm-hmm.
do they understand that many residents of the 6th District would be willing to train into those jobs? How much outreach is there to the
right.
business community to try to provide the training to, so some of your 6th District
right.
men
right.
can get some of those jobs? Is there, how much of that is going on? Recognition by the business community.
I would say, I mean, I don't want to ostracize businesses that are actually doing their due diligence and they're really working with community members, particularly Black males, to help provide training, to provide, you know, opportunities for work. But I don't think that there's a real conscious effort to really employ a large number of men. You have issues with the application process. Not, you know, they have to check a box if they have been a felon or not. That immediately weeds them out. There aren't enough efforts to be able to look at those types of issues that actually keep them out of employment. And quite frankly, there are institutions that will provide the trainings, that will, you know, work with individuals to get them the skills that they need to help fill that skills gap. But somewhere, that conversation between those organizations and those employers are falling by the wayside, and they're not being matched up very well.
The dropout rate is more than one-third at MPS, mm-hmm. Milwaukee Public Schools. If you could wave a wand, what would you give MPS to raise that dropout rate and do a better job?
Mm. You know, restoring MPS financially back to where they should be in order to really be able to fill the classrooms, open up buildings, that would be the answer that I have. You know, we've come so far as a country, but we keep going backwards. And one of the ways we're, you know, going backwards is through education. We're not willing to put our money where our mouth is. We're not willing to invest in the kids that we say we really want to help. And that's been a huge problem. I think if we restore those funding cuts that has happened over my lifetime, even when I was in school, I mean, it started really early on in my life. But, I mean, it really needs to happen where we got to really put our money where our mouth is. If we say education is important, then we got to prove it, and we're not proving it. And that's not just at, you know, in the public school systems. That is also in the universities. There are, you know, we're not meeting the needs there either. We expect to produce great talent. We expect to fill these skills gaps, but yet we're not producing or putting forth those types of funding opportunities to lift our kids up.
Choice started 25, 26, maybe 27 years in Milwaukee.
Right.
Has it been a success overall?
No.
I
mean,
it is not?
I can, every statistic that we have seen about choice has shown us that choice has not worked for our children. It just has not worked. We know it's not going away. However, you can't keep starving the one system that has to educate all kids, regardless if they are in choice or if they go to a private school where their parents are paying. We still have to educate our kids, and you're starving the system that's going to do that, putting it in the system that still isn't doing it. It's not doing a better job. They're not even comparable to what the public school system is capable and able to do. It's been a failure, and we have. You know, again, we're talk a good game. Well, I'll say the legislature has talked a good game, but they have not worked diligently to match that talk. It's come very, very short.
When I interview candidates whose names are on the November 8 ballot, mm-hmm. and I ask them, how should you help the state's largest city, Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Some of them say, if we could get unity among City of Milwaukee legislators on specific needs, that would be... So my question is, City of Milwaukee legislators are divided on choice and some other important issues, aren't they?
Yes, and there is a divide.
Doesn't that set back the long-term goals of helping the residents of the 6th District?
It does play its part. And it does allow for that conversation. It plays its part. It doesn't allow for concrete, constructive conversations to happen. But I don't want to just blame it on the divide in Milwaukee. We're all still interested in education. We're all still interested in having that conversation, and we want to be at the table. But it's, you know, when you start to divide us and pick us apart and we allow you to do that, then quite frankly, that creates this bigger gap and a continuum that there's no, you know, we're not going to really make that big difference. And so, you know, there's going to come a time where we're going to have that hard conversation within Milwaukee legislatures to respect each other where we can, accept our differences, and figure out what's the best plan to move forward. And we have to be willing to be flexible in our thinking. And flexible meaning we're not going to agree on everything, and we got to agree to disagree. But at the end of the day, we all have to come together at this table as one unit. And until they get to that point, you know, they're going to play their part in not allowing for constructive conversations to happen.
How would you describe the relationship between residents of your 6th Senate District and the Milwaukee Police Department?
It's a pretty mix in a 6th Senate District because I have all kinds of people in my district, all different types of people coming from different income backgrounds, but we do have more poverty in the district. It's clearly a minority-majority district, and so those issues will definitely stick its head up about, you know, how people are dealing with police and, you know, police situations, and even the relationships that police have with the community members. I think, you know, people are frustrated, quite frankly. And it doesn't help that the media and social media has incited and spiked those up because of the situations that are occurring in different parts of the country. I think, you know, I don't believe that people don't want police officers on the street. We want them there. We want to call them when there is an issue. However, when you have, you know, a police chief, you know, that's allowing for there to be some form of racial profile when you are pulling people over and you are stopping kids on the street, it doesn't create a good surface or a starting point for a conversation of trust on either side. Mm-hmm. And so it has incited, you know, that type of policing has incited many situations where, you know, folks are just fed up and tired. And again, when you start adding all of that to what's happening across the country, it does not make for a good situation. But, you know, it's definitely an area that I think there is a lot of effort to work this thing out. There's a lot of conversations happening to work this thing out between the community and the police. But we have a long way to go. We have a long way to go.
you referred to what's the tragic events that are happening nationally. Yeah. Here's my question. In 10 or 11 or 12 years, what are you going to tell Anthony Thomas about when he has an interaction with a police officer?
Right.
What advice are you going to give him?
Wow, that's an excellent question, because one of the conversations I had with my husband really early on, we first had our son, was, you know, are we going to raise him to be oppressed or free? Because as Black folk, we have no option, to be quite frank. We want an option. Sometimes we think we have an option, but we really don't have an option. And so what leads us to rearing our kids and raising them up is the oppressive side, consciously and subconsciously. And so that is something that I'm working through.
I see.
That how do I prepare my son for the real world? Because I think when we share too quickly the fears of the world, we pretty much trap our kids. We trap them from growing. We keep them from growing. We keep them from expanding their minds and being able to realize that they can see the world from a different perspective based on how they want to show up in this space. And showing up in a space doesn't mean that you have to make yourself small, doesn't mean that you have to be fearful, it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, show up too big and too grand either, you know. But there's a space for you, but you have to figure out where it is. But as Black folk, you know, the space that we've been conditioned to be in is to come into a space and make yourself small. Come into a space and, you know, don't act like you're too good for anything or anybody, and dare not, you know, walk with your head and chest out. I mean, how dare you walk into this space like that? But it starts at home. There's that, you know, that level of, you're going to respect me, and if you don't, there are going to be consequences. You know, but mostly out of love, but yet a preparation for
reality.
Because our parents and grandparents have been conditioned that way. And so that conditioning has lived on. It's hard to die. It's hard to kill that, because you still see, even in our day, that things still happen to us, to the people that look like us, to the folks that try to achieve like us. You know, I mean, even in case in point, I'm a senator, clearly, but I find that if I'm not dressed a certain way when I walk into a space, I can easily be mischaracterized as a little girl, you know, someone who's not professional. Like, I don't have a professional job. I might have a job, but it certainly isn't a senator. They'll basically say, oh my God, I had one person say at a store, because I was dressed down, they said, are you a hairdresser? Now, this is a black woman, though. So it's not even just, you know, anybody. It's just this woman. I wasn't dressed to look like anything. I wasn't trying to, but I'm in Target. And
you're
this
running
woman,
an errand.
I'm running an errand, and this woman comes up to me and says, are you a hairdresser? You look like a hairdresser. And because she wanted some advice on hair. And I said, and I just giggled, and I said, no, ma'am, I'm not. And I moved on. When I am with my son, I see how people look at me, because if I'm not dressed up, I look like a little kid. If I don't have my makeup on and my hair is in its curls or whatever, I don't look like an adult. I know that. And my son is this big kid who's way past he's in 100th percentile day one. So he's a pretty big kid. So he's not talking the way you would think he's supposed to talk, like a 3-year-old, and he's only one. So I see the looks I get, and it's almost like, oh, she must be a teenage mom, or she couldn't be married. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it still happens to us, no matter where I go, what I do. And so you're always questioning, did this happen because of this? Did this happen because of that? Is it my race? Did I treat them badly and didn't know? Did I have a look on my face? Was my demeanor not right? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it doesn't matter what you do. You know, we're still conditioned because we're reminded that that's how we're supposed to be. And so as getting back to your question, how do I get my son ready for this world? Is, quite frankly, I have decided I'm not conditioning my kid. And I'm not going to make him fear anything that he should not fear naturally. I'm not going to limit his growth and development, you know, by trying to put him in his place and what he should do and what he should not do. I want him to have a voice, because I want him to be a man, a strong man, and I want him to own his own business. Because at the end of the day, if you don't own anything, you're constantly, you owing, you know, you owe to somebody because they are expecting something out of you. But if you own something and you set your own, you know, pace in life, you can do whatever you want to do. And I don't care what skin color you are. And you don't have to be reminded that every day when you walk out the house, you're a black man. You don't have to be reminded. And he can live anywhere he wants. So that's what we're doing. Our conditioning for our son is to be an owner.
That's a fascinating answer. We're almost out of time, so just a couple more questions.
Yes.
What's at stake in this presidential election for Anthony Thomas, for the 6th Senate district in Milwaukee, for the city of Milwaukee? What's at stake?
What's at stake? I mean, you're talking our freedoms. Just to be free in this country, to be, you know, to walk out of your house and not, you know, be afraid that your neighbors are going to turn on you because of some ignorant comments that, you know, a candidate made. You know, we really need to be careful about, you know, just how we, you know, where we put our interests, where our interests lie, and how we look at the rest of society. I think, you know, we're working really hard right now as a country to remember that we're all good. and to remember that we all deserve to have equal rights, that we all deserve to have, you know, everything that is promised to us as a human. And so, I mean, if I refuse to speak on how this, if Trump gets in, I refuse to talk about if he gets in this Senate, because I don't want to even speak it into.
Well, I'll scratch off that question then. Go ahead. Excuse me. Go ahead.
You know, because I just believe, you know, there's so much power in what we say and in our words. I try to be really careful with what I say.
Okay.
And I just know that if we are not careful and we get short-sighted, we're going to go back 100+ years, and it's going to take us too long to get back to where we are today. And we just have to be careful. But I know that in any storm, there's hope. And I'm hopeful that, you know, it's not, there aren't nearly as many people out there that believe the foolishness that they're saying as it has appeared to be. I know that for sure. It's just not.
Just two final questions. 2 years from now, we're going to be electing the next governor. Mm-hmm. Which Democratic candidates should consider running to help residents of the 6th Senate District mm-hmm. in Milwaukee? Is there any names you want to throw out?
To be quite honest with you, I have no names that I think is going to be a great candidate. I think we just need a complete rebirth right now and reexamination of ourselves. We have so much work to do. And if we don't figure this thing out, we'll lose the governorship again. And, you know, that's sort of where I'm at. I just don't see who could be the next governor in 2 years.
Then my final question, what advice do you have for the next senator from the 6th Senate District?
My advice to the person coming in truly is to just remember that they're representing their constituency each and every time they come to Madison. I would impart to them, if they are a person who is a faith-based person and they are spiritual, is to pray every single day that they don't lose their soul doing this job, because you still have to have a balance, and you still have to remember that you're in it for the greater good. And we're not, you know, we're servants. It's not about you. And I think, you know, if a person remembers that, they'll do well. And don't get caught up in the gossip and the foolishness. Okay, that's my word for all that transpired these days. But just really don't get caught up in the gossip. You can hear it, because I realize that it's good to know what's out there, but you don't need to go back and, you know, you don't have to go and chase it down, because it's going to come to you. And you don't have to react, you know, angry about it or anything like that. Some of it will sting and it's going to hurt you because you're human. And that's a good thing if you feel it. You have to. That means you haven't actually lost your soul, right? There's a conscience there. But you have to be, again, reminded why you're here, what is the purpose of being here, and stay focused.
Democratic Senator Nakia Harris-Dodd, congratulations on 4 years representing the 6th Senate District in Milwaukee. Good luck, whatever your next chapter is.
Thank you.
And thank you for sitting down for a very thoughtful exit interview. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Senator.